Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. My name is Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles, E. Juan Posada, the producer, the Juan Posada, and we have Jim Spencer here with us today.
The Jim Spencer.
Yes. Jim, it's great to have you here.
Jim goes by many things, as we call him different things. He continues to go by them. It's pretty impressive, really.
It's a good sport. If everybody would just like take a minute and just say a quick prayer for us, this is going to be a very interesting episode, I think, because...
You don't even know that.
Or it could be...
You don't even know that.
It could actually not even be interesting at all. It's Dave's turn, and he decided to say, I don't know what we're going to talk about today. So
let the Holy Spirit work, man.
We are really letting the Holy Spirit, leaving room for the Holy Spirit.
I have like two things I want to ask you, and then like and beyond that, we'll see.
Okay. All right.
This could be the best episode of our whole lives.
Or it could bomb.
It could.
So
it's happened before, I think.
It's exciting. And nervous. All right. What are we drinking tonight?
Today, we are drinking another Wyoming whiskey we've had in the past. Their Wyoming whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Their regular, if you will. And then most recently we had their reserve.
Wasn't it barrel proof?
No.
Oh.
It was not.
Oh, okay.
It's like their reserve. I forget, like,
okay.
Whatever, their special one.
Oh, yeah, because it was double casked.
Like. No, this one is double cask.
Oh.
We're drinking the double cask today.
Okay.
This one's 50%. It's 100 proof.
Okay.
And it says it's the second cask is sherry.
Okay, so it's...
And I know you like sherry casks.
I do.
Yeah.
I do, yeah.
So anyway, we're going to try it.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. Cheers. So the color looks like a, you know, Oloroso sherry...
Yeah.
...aged whiskey, bourbon. Typically, we've said on the show before, but if you're just tuning in, if you're a new listener... And you're looking to maybe getting to the whiskey game. Typically, I advise people to go with the Oloroso cask or double cask for this instance to start off with whiskey because typically it's a little sweeter. It didn't have as much of a bite. It's not as aggressive. It's a nice palatable whiskey.
So there's not an age statement on here, but it does say. That the first 5 years are all just in the regular oak barrel.
Okay.
So it's at least five years old. And then, because it's not going to be in the sherry cask for too long. I mean, could just be a month, right? Is that your understanding typically of sherry when they do a sherry cask?
I think it's longer than that.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
But
either way, so it's that's the only age statement.
On the nose, it's...
And once again, I have not found this in Oklahoma. I bought this actually when we were in Wyoming. So I don't know what its distribution is like.
On the nose, you get I get raisin, I get hay.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of...
You can smell that it's...
The Oloroso. And it's strong. Yes, yeah, strong smelling.
Smell the higher alcohol. Ooh. That has a rich... Did you say raisins on the nose?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a really rich taste to it, kind of right up front.
Well, at the very end, you get almost like a chocolate.
Uh-huh. That is delicious.
That is really good. It's very interesting.
It doesn't taste like your typical sherry cask. It has the sweetness
it has
it
more of a
sherry.
Bite, though. It has a little bit more of a bite to it. It has a little bit more the peppery kick. But at the very end, as it was lingering, you almost get like this chocolate taste, uh-huh. Or at least I did.
Yeah, I think that's delicious.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I haven't been disappointed with any Wyoming whiskeys, to be honest with you. Like, all the ones that we've had, which I guess there's only three.
Just three, yeah. But
their staple one, I've bought as many as I can find, basically, because
yeah, I did too.
It's cheap, so good.
It's cheap.
How much is this one?
And really good. I don't remember. It was, I think, maybe high 50s.
Okay.
I can't remember because I bought this one and the other one at the same time. One of them was 65, but I think the reserve was... the more expensive one. And mm-hmm. So I think this one was maybe 55, somewhere in there.
55.
55. Shiggity what?
Nice.
55.
It's good. Hey, I'm pumped about tomorrow.
Very good.
You should tell them what we're doing tomorrow.
Tomorrow is the annual Wiffle Ball tournament, everybody. Please pray for Adam and I's team, Wiffle While You Work, that we would reign victorious, that God would
we've gotten close.
The might of his arm.
We've gotten close several times.
Yeah, so we've always competed very well.
Right. So we have a friend, Chris Hanisch, who hosts a Labor Day Wiffle Ball tournament every year.
It is like one of the things in the year I look forward to the most.
And it's one of those Catholic culture events of the year,
right.
I think, in Tulsa, where tons of Catholic families all gather. He turns his backyard is a whole wiffle ball stadium, if you will.
I mean, it's that way all year round. I mean, he has a wiffle ball field in his backyard.
In his backyard. He has the scoreboard, bleachers, sound system, PA system. It's all chalked. It's all manicured.
It's rather incredible.
Hot dogs, snow cones. It's an 8-18 tournament, double elimination.
Five person teams.
Is it five?
Yeah.
Yeah, 5-person teams. It's just a lot of fun. It's awesome because you have tons of kids running around all day long.
It's just so, it is awesome because you're there, you're competing, but it's all very friendly, yet still.
Competitive.
You know, you're
competitive.
There to win. You know, everybody's there to win.
And you're in front of everybody. I mean, you have this audience the whole time.
Like a bunch of big families the whole time.
Right.
And priests are there swinging wiffle ball bats.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, you know, probably like a priest in a cassock trying to hit a home run.
Yeah.
Like, what else do you want on Labor Day? Let me ask you this. What are you doing on Labor Day that's better than that?
You're the pitcher of our team, typically.
I will, I'm sure, pitch some.
I hit a home run last year.
Nice.
So,
yeah. Which is hard to do with a wiffle ball.
It is not easy to do.
Yeah.
But it's just so much fun. It's just a joyous day.
Yeah. And, you know, the fence is higher this year.
Oh, he did? He made it higher?
Mm-hmm. Well, the people who live next door have a celebrity staying in their house. And so they part of that was the celebrity wanted a higher fence.
I see.
Or a completed fence or something.
I see. Okay. I'm pumped about it, though. It's going to be a lot of fun. Another reason why, and I say this on Twitter whenever, you know, I tweet things, and when I do, a lot of times it's highlighting the things of this, of Tulsa, like why to be moving to Tulsa.
Only if you're Catholic.
How Tulsa and Eastern Oklahoma is the place to be for Catholic families.
I mean,
it's just,
I don't want to seem that way. If you're open to becoming Catholic, you can move here.
Sure.
But if you're Catholic, you should totally move here.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you're leaving California, like, probably a lot of you are, and who can blame you, then, like, check out Tulsa. You know, we have it going on.
Dude, the Farmstead, Brandon Sheard from Farmstead Meatsmith, he's here.
I know.
He's in Sand Springs.
I know.
He moved already?
He's moving. Yeah, he's bought a home.
Mm-hmm.
Which is incredible. Awesome.
He had it narrowed down to like here and Idaho.
Or Wyoming. Somewhere around in there.
Because they have a big fraternity parish there in Idaho. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, how's the bishop? Is he friendly? And he's like, well, I don't know how good the relationship is between their bishop and the fraternity parish. I was like, well, we have a sweet bishop.
Bishop Conerla is.
Maybe factor that in. He's like, you know what? That's a good point. So I don't want to say that
you
I
were
was
the
one who swayed his swayed his decision, but you know,
you draw your own conclusions.
I mean,
yes, I'm really excited about that.
We need to get him on the show again.
Yeah, well, we'll be able to.
I mean, he's just like now that he's just like here in town.
Yeah, it'll be
Sand Springs. People don't know it's a suburb.
Yeah, of Tulsa.
It's one of the burbs.
Yeah, so that's exciting.
My dad grew up in Sand Springs. He's the Sandite King.
He's a Sandite. Yeah, that's their
the Sandite. What a terrible mascot.
Sand flea. That's what a sand is.
Yeah. It's a mite. It's a little bitty bug that lives in the sand. It's like, hey guys, what should we name us our school after? I don't know. How about those terrible mites that
either eagles or sandites?
Right. I don't know. You know what I'm terrified of? Those little bugs in the sand. You guys ever seen those? Chilling. They're chilling.
So anyway, so that's exciting. We have another project that we're working on. We're writing a book.
Yes.
With our wives.
Yes.
We've gone through one round of edits.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully...
Kind of half a round.
Half a round, I guess.
My bad.
Chalk that one up on me.
Yeah.
But so that'll be exciting. We're gonna have a book on the domestic church. Writing it with our wives through... our publisher is... I just went blank.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It's late.
If you hadn't asked me, I could have told you, like, immediately.
Ignatius. No.
No, the same guy who's doing the Bible in a Year podcast.
Same. Ascension Press.
Ascension. Thank you.
Golly.
Also want to give a shout out to my goddaughter, Bella, who received her first communion today.
You know what? She had a confession the other day, and I said, listen, tonight when you go home, you pray for me. And she was like, I will.
Okay. You're being a little intense, but I guess I will.
You remember me forever.
You remember me forever.
We'll be right back. I want to give a big shout out to Jonathan Conrad over at the Catholic Woodworker. Jonathan started his ministry with one sole purpose in mind, and that was get quality crafted rosaries into Catholics' hands. And he's been doing it now so well that he has opened up a storefront. He has a brick and mortar store. If you go to CatholicWoodworker.com, you can check out the whole facility. We're really proud of you, Jonathan. I remember when you first started this whole thing. We're thankful for your friendship. We're thankful for your willingness to support the Catholic Man Show. If you guys go to CatholicWoodworker.com, use the promo code TCMS, you get 10% off all of your purchases. We just want to thank you, Jonathan, for your love of our mother and love of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and all the good work you're doing to grow his kingdom. Cheers.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. You know what? We haven't given out the warning in a while, so... If you are sensing short-term paralysis, overload of any kind, this is why. This is Catholic Man Show. We're dealing with very high levels toxic levels of authentic masculinity. Show could be harmful to your health if you or anyone in the listening radius. I'm rusty. Is susceptible to high levels of manliness. Okay.
Okay, we are moving on.
I want to tell another story about my goddaughter, Bella.
Okay, can I just tell Father Cosgrove that there are no pictures that we know of in the book, and so he may not have to buy it.
Oh.
Because he told me if there's no pictures in the book, he's not buying it.
Maybe we should have our pictures in it.
That could be good. I'd like that. Maybe like several times.
Every couple pages.
Here's David Niles. Here's David Niles a bit bigger. But she had her first confession.
Yes.
You know.
I did know this.
And she called my mom on her way home from her first confession, and she said, when I walked out, it felt like I had little rocks on my heart, and they just got rolled away. And it was just so funny to hear her tell that story.
I was dead in this tomb.
And then it's like, I took a breath for the first time. It's just so funny to hear a little seven-year-old, you know, it's like, Bella, like, you don't even know, yeah, okay?
That is...
You don't even know what sin feels like. It is the worst.
That was one of the things. Our buddy Derek and Whitney, Whitney's about to have their baby. Mm-hmm. And we were talking to him via text message, I guess, texting them. And she said, hey, is there something that you want me to offer up for the contractions? Mm-hmm. You know? And I was like, yes. I said, to guard our children against their first mortal sin. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we picked.
Nice.
But that's such a great thing to pray as a dad, and as you know, as a mom, as parents. Mm-hmm. That I think that I probably wouldn't have thought about that, and I don't know where we heard that. I don't know. I'm not sure where we heard that.
Well, it's in the St. Bridget prayers. That's probably the first place that I like encountered that as like an obvious idea is that you offer up the agony in the garden, protection against the first mortal sin. No. It's the scourging at the pillar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just think that's a great idea. As a dad, and if you have young kids or grandkids...
It is something to pray for.
It is definitely something
protection
you should pray for.
The first mortal sin. Because if you can keep doing that, if you can keep pushing it off...
Yeah. The longer you go...
Right. You know, like...
Grace builds on nature.
Yeah. Maybe you could push it off indefinitely.
Maybe, yeah.
So, the man gear today is the sawhorse. Sawhorses.
Okay.
I want to get, like, do you have any opinions on sawhorses?
Shockingly, I do.
Yeah. The first question is, can you have too many sawhorses?
Yes.
I mean, you could. I mean, I suppose. But you can't. I mean, like, if you have five, there is still conceivably a situation where you might go, dang it, I wish I had one more sawhorse. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I only have two, and I will tell you, that is not enough.
I have four. I have not gone to a point where I thought I needed more, but, you know, I just broke down my whole big workbench in right. my garage,
yes,
which
I, mean,
I didn't really need the sawhorses at
was
that time.
Huge. You right. built a huge... Got yeah. a little, you got a little rambunctious, I think, when you were building the work.
I was zealous.
You were definitely zealous.
Yes.
For the, like, woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But, you know, as a father of four... I have less and less time to...
Is your car in the garage right now?
It is.
I bet it is.
It is.
Where's your wife's car?
It's outside.
It's in the
it
driveway.
It doesn't fit yet. It doesn't fit. There's not enough room yet.
Yeah, I haven't got around to it, okay? Mine fits, and so... Like,
mine's a smaller car.
I'm just less motivated at this point.
Listen.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yes.
You're welcome.
So there's a couple things that I would say to think about with sawhorses. The first thing is storage. How are you storing them?
Yeah.
I have several different kinds. One of the kinds that I have is that they're plastic, but they fold up. They collapse basically into
the legs collapse into the
into it. So I mean, it just takes
less space. That is absolutely the way to go.
No. I'm sorry. The plastic ones do not take.
They don't.
They
okay.
They're the ones that just
it's
fold
the aluminum.
like a lawn chair.
Right. They fold in half.
You know, but the other ones that I have,
the aluminum ones.
Yeah.
Are they
the aluminum? Yeah.
When I think about the ones where the legs fold up like down into the
actual sawhorse,
those are aluminum.
And they're heavy, but they're a lot.
Those are the way to go because
I
have plastic ones. I got them for free. So, you know, like, you can't really complain too much, but I just really hate them. I just do.
I like mine.
My plastic ones.
They're lightweight.
When you open them.
They're nice.
There's, like, these connecting pieces between the legs that are always, like, coming unclipped from it, you know? And so, like, every time I open them, I have to, like, re-interlock these clips that go, that kind of alternate which direction they connect.
Mm-hmm.
And, then if you're leaning over when you open it, the sawhorse piece itself, like at the top, comes together, and I have just like pinched like my chest before, and that really hurts. Once you, I get them open and you know you're using them, they work just fine, right? They just and I don't know, because I got them for free, I don't know what the price difference is between an aluminum sawhorse and the other ones, between these plastic ones. Mm-hmm. But man, I wish I had more, mm-hmm. regardless of what kind I had. But also the fact that they don't collapse down smaller is really kind of a nuisance.
Remember when we lived together and Haley and I got married, and so we all three were living in the same house, and then Haley got pregnant.
Yeah.
And then I built sawhorses at the house.
Yeah.
Okay. So I built those. They did not collapse or anything like that. They were just there.
Wooden.
They were wooden. And they worked really well because they were very sturdy, very hard to put away.
Uh-huh.
But my mother-in-law sawed right through them on accident.
In their wood.
So you can
do that.
Yeah. So it was actually pretty comical because I made them for, you know, each child I try to make something for them, right? Before they're born. So I made these sawhorses to prepare getting this crib ready to go for Luke. And like, I was so proud of these sawhorses, right? So my mother-in-law comes into town because we're getting ready for the baby. She's helping me. And like, I had just got done kind of like, you know, puffing my chest out, talking about how I made these. Look at these. They're all level. Like it was perfect. You know, like it's all right angles. Like everything looked good.
Yeah.
You know,
let me use them.
And she was like, yeah, yeah. Okay. And so she was using them. And then just that circular saw just went right through it. And it just went split, you know, and fell down. And she felt absolutely terrible. And like, it was one of those things like, dang it, I spent like 3 weeks on these things, but I couldn't be mad. It was like, not that she wanted to do it. It was just an accident. She felt terrible about it. And I was like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. But I was a little panicky inside because
a little heartbroken about it. Yeah. So I think that you need at least 4 sawhorses because there's times, this just happened to me recently, I'm building a bookshelf.
The second one.
Yeah, so I got a bookshelf for my wife last year on her birthday, which was October
20. You built one.
Well, no. I said, hey, for your birthday, I'm giving you bookshelves to match these other ones. Because I had already previously made a really nice bookshelf. You know, I really liked the way it came out. And so I said last year on October 25th, 2020, I said, hey, for your birthday, I'm going to get you new bookshelves. I haven't made them yet, but that's your present.
Uh-huh.
And I decided, like, I guess I should actually build those before her next birthday gets here.
And like, it's the final countdown.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, I'm building bookshelves. And so like, there's just times when you need to cut a long board, you know? And so if you just have two, well, where, how do you position, you know, you got to position them so, oh, when you make the cut, one side's going to fall,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you really need 4 so you can stabilize both sides of the cut. You know what I mean? And if you don't, what you have to do is just end up making the cut low, like on the ground, you know, mm-hmm. maybe just propping it up with 2x4s. That works. But it's just like if you're doing a big project where you're doing a lot of cuts, it's just hard to make all those cuts down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier. I feel like you can do a better job when you can get the project higher, you know, up on the sawhorses. And maybe you have a big workbench like you had where that really takes care of. I mean, that really is
well,
a
if
nice
you have
thing.
Four, if you have 4 sawhorses, you put plywood on top of those and all of a sudden you have a new workbench.
Whatever, dude, plywood is like $1,000 now.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
It is. But
what you just said, that's what I did when I was redoing the siding on my house, is I just took a piece of sheet of plywood and put it. And so that created like a big workspace.
Mm-hmm.
That you
could always break down.
Sure. I could just take it down.
Right.
And then I got an aluminum table, like a camping table, and set it way behind me because those siding pieces were
really big,
15 feet long, I think, you know,
yeah.
They were very long. But anyway, a sawhorse, it just, Sometimes you need one. Sometimes you need four.
Yeah, or six.
So it's really worth it to get them. And once again, if you can get some where the legs collapse down, it just makes it so much easier to store.
The ones I have are Cobalt. They're Cobalt is the brand for the sawhorses that just completely come down. And the legs are adjustable, right? So the height of the sawhorses can be adjusted, which is very nice if you have specific heights that you're wanting to cut, or you know, you want to keep everything level,
right?
You know, and it's like you keep it all in the same.
I could have used that when I was using the table saw for these bookshelves. I really needed something that was exactly the same height as the table saw,
right?
And I had to kind of rig
it's
it
nice.
Up.
Yeah. It's nice. So, all right. Well, hey, how does it feel to be older? By the way,
it feels good, sort of. It doesn't. I lied.
You're 35 now.
I'm sorry. Feels terrible.
Welcome to the club.
I hate it.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I want to give a shout out to my nephew, Danny Klein. Turned 6 years old this weekend. Big six. Six is a great age.
I feel like it is. I feel like it's a good age. Yeah. When I was little, I always liked it when I turned an even number. Mm-hmm. Kind of an OCD thing, I think. I did not like
odd numbers.
Being odd numbers.
You had to wait a whole nother
year. Because they're not balanced. There's no symmetry there.
Yeah.
I hated it.
That makes sense.
I remember turning 11 going like, dang it! A whole year! This is going to drive me crazy! I really do remember that. It's really funny. Now I'm 35. We are still in the octave of my birthday. You were right about that. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yes.
It is an octave. We can celebrate it for...
For 8 days.
8 days.
Nice.
So we're still there.
We're still...
Till Thursday. Thursday will be the pinnacle of the octave, I suppose.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're just going to keep that going. I still have cake at home.
Still eating it.
Yeah.
Good.
For loving
breakfast.
It. Sure. Yeah. Why not?
What are we going to talk about today?
You know, I don't know. We're just going to see kind of what comes up. You know, I thought we could talk maybe a little bit about prayer. We like to talk about prayer. I thought we could talk about the Eucharist maybe a little bit today, since Bella had her first communion. It's just making me think about the Eucharist. How's your prayer life? You asked me this last week, and I didn't have time to ask you back because I think we ran out of time.
It's going really well. It is consistent. I have been more intentional about trying to involve contemplative prayer into my prayer life. So that's always good.
Mm-hmm.
I've had, you know, Haley and I have a strong prayer life together, which was really good. Things are going well thus far.
How much does Haley's prayer life affect you, do you think?
Haley's prayer life affects me?
Mm-hmm. How much of it?
I mean,
obviously it's going to affect you a lot, but
yeah.
You know, like, can you tell in your life
so
any changes in her prayer life?
Well, so I'm not sure about that, but I know that you know, women have this intuition whenever they see their loved ones and they realize that they're stressed or they're pushed to the max or something is bothering them.
Yeah.
And Haley's really good at being in tune with that. And I don't find out till later that she'd been praying about the, you know, whatever it is that I was stressed about or like trying to get through or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I always try, you know, I always try to appreciate in her and tell her thank you for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we both realize that our prayer life may either be struggling or that we need to make sure we get to confession is when we just continually feel like that everything is in chaos.
Yeah.
When I feel like that I'm a little short or snappy or I get angry quicker, and I'm not an angry guy, but my patience is running thin.
Mm-hmm.
And when she feels overwhelmed sometimes and
that's when I have kind of the shortest fuse is if the kids are wearing out Lady Pamela,
mm-hmm.
then I get like,
even more.
Yeah. Like, My tolerance level goes down for, you know,
for any
bad
shenanigans.
Behavior. Right, exactly. Right. Exactly.
That is a cue for me as a father to say, this weekend we are going to confession. You know, we typically try to go.
This is something I'm bad at. This is like something I'm really bad at.
We typically
organizing confession for the family.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be better at it once my kids actually start going to confession. I doubt it. I mean, if I'm not good at it now, why would I be good at it then? I need to just make a change now.
It'd be easier.
Yeah. I even have it on the calendar. And that still does not help me very much.
Well, yeah. So we typically try to go once a month. Mm-hmm. You know, Jude's going to be receiving his first confession in the Eucharist probably the end of this year.
Uh-huh.
And so...
Is that... You're already scheduling it?
You mean Jude.
I'm sorry. Did I say Luke? I meant Jude. Yes. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Juan.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, Luke. Yeah. So Jude will be... My second oldest will be receiving confession, reconciliation in the Eucharist. So, yes. I mean... You have to have a schedule. And so that's something that that we do. We try to do it once a month. However... In our house, if things start getting chaotic, it's like, listen, this Sunday before Mass, we are getting to Mass early to go to confession. Mm-hmm. That means we will be there 30 minutes before Mass starts to make sure that we go to confession.
Yeah.
That typically is a good sign for me.
That is tough to do before Mass because you do have to get there, especially if the whole family is going to go. You have to get there before anybody else. You have to be the first ones.
That's why you just 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Shoot for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Just always 30 minutes beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, though. How do you make, what are your thoughts on just your decision-making process for moral things that come up in your life? So something happens, you're trying to discern, is this a good thing for my family? Is this a bad thing for my family? Or good thing for me, bad thing for me? I'm curious. You're very good at looking at something, a situation, kind of pulling yourself back and assessing all angles of the situation to come up with an outcome, a decision. You're better at that than I am.
I think I can make decisions fairly quickly most of the time. If it's a moral question, then it's usually a very easy decision. You know, if something moral is at stake, then we're just going to take the moral choice, I think that's easy. What gets hard is, when you're trying to decide which is the better choice, you're presented with two good options. That's when it gets really hard. And sometimes it's literally, well, which one's easier? And that's not necessarily bad. If you're looking at these and I say, these are both good, and one does not appear to be better than the other one, why not pick the easier one? You know, if that's going to involve less transition for your family, a smoother, decision, whatever. I would rather take something, if two things are just as good, I'd rather implement one that's easier than the other, right? Because now I can take a good more assuredly. Why would you pick the harder one?
For sanctification.
Well, but there's no more good in it.
If you're offering up the difficulty.
Yeah.
That's what Jose Maria Escrivá says. And,
right.
Like,
and if it's something that's personal, if it's personal, the dishes and the trash need to be taken out. You need to do the dishes and the trash both need to be taken out tonight. Honey, I'll do the dishes. If you want to take out the trash, I'll do the dishes, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, the dishes are way worse. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But when it involves, your family, mm-hmm. Just to assure a peaceful family life, mm-hmm. sometimes take the easier choice. That's not hard to do. And it's not bad. Just because it's easy doesn't mean it's bad. So a lot of times, that's what I'll do. But I don't know. It's all situational. I can't really think of a good example of something I've done recently.
I think you're a lot better at being able to see different angles of the situation and assessing them than I am. I typically, when I'm confronted with a situation, I jump to the conclusion that I think is the best. I just start going. I'm a doer typically, mm-hmm. And so I don't even think about, even in my leadership classes that I used to take at Bishop Kelly High School, you know, the leadership classes would teach you, here's the situation, before you act, start thinking, like, what are the options of how to do something?
Right.
You know, and typically, I honestly don't stop and think about other options. I think of, this is the one I think is good, I'm moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Which often is good. Sometimes
it depends on how your conscience is.
You know,
forming.
I mean, it just depends, because sometimes you can be arrested by thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, so prudence I think lends itself towards action most of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different. We've talked about this before. There's different elements of what is a prudent decision. Well, you need to be well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've thought about it and made a decision, you do it.
You go.
I mean, so without that jump to action that you are very good at, it's not prudent.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be prudent.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture.
But thank you. I do appreciate. What you said.
Well, it's true.
So I was thinking about the Eucharist today. Just watching.
That's good.
Watching my goddaughter Bella received her first communion, and it's just like one of those things that is just crazy. The reality behind the Eucharist, and it's like, yeah, I know you thought about it 100 times probably, but then you actually sit there and think about it again,
mm-hmm.
and just the, like how is that even possible? That, you know, here is God.
Yeah, that you're welcoming the divine into your body.
You have this opportunity to receive Him. Like that. And what a gift that He just comes to us. He's ever present.
What
you know?
Is the divinization process? Like, what is that called? Isn't there a specific word for the divinization process?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Divinization is one of the words.
Yeah.
There is another word.
There is a better word.
You know what I was trying to think of? We had this feast the other day, the beheading of St. John the Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was last weekend. And I was there's a word for it, the recapitulation?
No.
Recapitulation. That would be like
reliving the history.
That would be like to put his head back on. That would be the recapitulation. But it's something like that. It has a sweet name, and I didn't. Maybe it's the capitulation.
The history of. Yeah.
Well, caput is head in Latin. The beheading. Yeah. Let's keep talking about the Eucharist when we get back.
Okay.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Having random Catholic rambling today. A title I came up with randomly. Thank you very much. So, Adam, you are a fan of Eucharistic adoration, is that correct?
This is correct. Yes.
You are
correct.
A fan.
I am a fan, yes.
So, the pros and cons, you'd. Mostly in the pro-con. Pro column.
Yes.
Pro-con. That's a trick.
I'm not sure. Yes, I'm a big fan.
Okay, what do you like about it? Just in your own words. And this is not like a legal
I get to
interview.
Spend time with Jesus.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. Mm-hmm. I like the intimacy of and the silence. It orients yourself to the to a higher good in adoration, because hopefully the adoration chapel is beautiful. Mm-hmm. The monstrance points towards that there is something special there, which is obviously true, mm-hmm. which is Jesus. So I'm a big fan.
I like it when Mass goes straight into adoration. Like, to me, that is... And when adoration leads up to Mass. I like both of those situations.
The coolest thing about, that I've ever seen regarding adoration that I've only seen once, and I don't know the legalities, I don't know canon law, so don't come after me. But
they probably will.
But one of our deacons, when he passed away here in the Diocese of Tulsa, he requested that his body be in front of the Eucharist until his funeral. Mm-hmm. So his body, quote unquote, was worshiping the Eucharist even without his soul there.
Yeah.
Which I thought was...
Well, I don't think his... I don't think that part is accurate.
Well,
but
maybe it was in its presence.
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously
your body can't be worshiping.
It wasn't at worship, right?
But it was in the presence.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool, because you think about it, like, he's probably having his, he has a particular judgment. He's, you know, we hope that he's in heaven.
Yeah.
And if he is in heaven at that moment, then his soul is in heaven. His body is in front of Jesus. His soul is in front of the beatific vision. His body is in front of our Lord. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
I mean, there's something beautiful in even the desire to have that, you know, the fact that you would request that
and think about it, like,
you thought about it, and when I die, I want my body to stay in front of the Eucharist, you know, like, I think that really there's a lot of grace in just the intention, mm-hmm. you know, behind that. But also, yeah, like, what a beautiful tradition. I'm surprised that's not more common.
I don't know if it is. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was awesome.
Maybe
though.
It is. Maybe it is common. But you're right. I've only heard of it happening in that one instance, mm-hmm. but like, what a, just, you know, for him, Deacon John Donnelly, a testament to the life he lived, I think.
Without a doubt.
Is like
sure.
final act. In fact, I should do that. I'm going to do that.
I've asked Haley, like, listen, when I die, I'd like you to happen.
I'm going to tell Pamela, because I've already told her that I have to die first.
So I've told that with Haley as well.
And yeah. I bound her under holy obedience to not die before me.
Nice.
So if she does, it's not going to be good.
Nice.
Because that would be disobedient.
Mm-hmm. So what do you like about adoration the most?
I also like those things, the quiet. There are just times where... Okay, what I like about adoration also is having it part of my regular prayer routine every week. You know, that it's scheduled. I have reserved time with the Lord. You know, holiness, the word sanctus, means to set aside. Mm-hmm. You know, and that something would have been regarded as holy because it was removed from secular use. Like, you know, this bowl is a holy bowl. Well, why? Because you're not allowed to use it anymore, and it's only for God. This bowl's whole purpose is only in the service of our Lord. That's why...
To glorify our Lord, yeah.
That's why this bowl is a holy bowl, because it's been set aside for God, mm-hmm. okay? And so when you have something scheduled, it's good to go to adoration, like, oh, well, you know, I go when I can. And some people just... Their schedule is not such that it allows for a consistent time, mm-hmm. right? But I think most people actually can do it, just from a scheduling standpoint. So when you do that, it's like, boom, now you too have set aside something for our Lord. And so even if you go to adoration and you don't feel like, oh man, you know, I didn't get anything out of it today. You did. I mean, you always do. It's never happened where someone...
And
went to adoration with a good heart.
It's not about, like, how much go to get something
That's
out
right.
of it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's
if you're judging
just it, not even the right attitude.
Right. If you're judging it by, oh, I got something out of it, then that is like an imperfect way of looking at it.
It's an imperfect understanding.
Yeah.
You're right. But still, I think that's kind of a common...
Sure.
You know, like, oh, because you might think maybe I'm just not bringing my whole self, you know, allowing myself to be distracted here in adoration. You know, the Lord wants greater things for me. I'm just not allowing because, you know, I'm not really like fully participating in this hour with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not truly
I think Aquinas says that if you allow yourself intentionally to be distracted in prayer, it can be a venial sin.
I could see that.
Like if you intentionally allow yourself to be distracted in prayer. So it's not like, oh, I got distracted. No. It's like you got distracted. You recognize I'm distracted, but I like this thought, you know, that's running through my head. I'm going to keep running this thought through my head while I'm supposed to be praying.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me of what we talked about the other day.
It's just unjust.
About avoiding the temptation to sin, you know, and if you like allow
meditate
yourself
to think about
like,
it.
Ooh, I'm just going to let it tempt me for a while.
Right.
You know, knowing you're not going to do it, but I do like the temptation, you know.
Right.
If you're doing it on purpose, I do think that is, you're in the realm of sin now.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. But yeah, so like when you have that regular adoration hour, it does, it's like sanctifying your day. At least that 1 hour, whether you feel like it's holy or you don't,
mm-hmm.
it is set aside for the Lord.
And one way to really think about when you're walking into adoration, you know, because, you know, Christ is outside, you know, God is outside of time. But as you're walking in, if you think, you know what, for the last 2,000 years, for all of eternity, God has waited for this moment to spend time with me in adoration.
Yeah, bro.
You know, like he has waited for me.
Yeah.
To spend this unique time together, to grow together in relationship, the creator, you know, and the created together in this moment.
Totally, dude.
Is just, to me, that sets... I try to think of that every time I walk into adoration, and that kind of sets the tone for me, knowing that Christ has been waiting for me for this moment for all of eternity.
Dude, that makes like being late to adoration sound really bad. Like he's been waiting for 2,000 years and you were late.
You were late.
Can you believe, like, what were you doing? Probably nothing important. You know what I mean? Like, what could you have been doing?
But I think it just goes to show, like, how much Christ continually is just drawing us towards him. He's given us so many different options and ways of being able to meet us and interject into our lives. You know, and when he does, it's just these huge grace bombs that happen. And we don't realize, kind of like what we were saying earlier, you don't realize, it's not like you're trying to get something out of it. You don't realize the amount of grace that's being poured out. You don't understand, you can't see it on this side of the veil.
Mm-hmm.
But Christ has been waiting for it for all of eternity, not just for the last 2,000 years, for all of eternity.
You're right.
You know, because before you were in the womb, he formed you. He knew you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he knew at this time and this, you know, this specific time in place in this in the world that he created, he was going to have one-on-one time with you.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think about
that. Like to me, that gives you chill. Like to me, it gives me chills thinking about it.
Totally. And you know, I think one of the best things that I have done as a father is bringing my kids to adoration regularly.
Mm. I'm real glad you brought this up because I think you have a really good system. Why don't you tell the system?
So,
what you do?
So far it's just with my girls. We have daddy daughter dates. So on the first, I just do it on the first, my first adoration day of the month. So the first Monday of the month, it's a rotation. You know, I just take one of the girls with me to adoration, and then we go. So first we go to adoration, which I have at 5:00. So it works really well for this system.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to dinner. We always get dessert at dinner. Okay. That's a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I go anywhere they want to go. And, you know, when you're 3, 4, and 6, you don't really know that many places.
Right.
Okay?
Chick-fil-A is
you know what?
The
They've
list.
Never asked to go to Chick-fil-A. Brahms is really close. So we go to Brahms a lot, which is great because I got to, like, introduce them to the banana split.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And Sundays blew their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
They got this big picture of a banana split on the wall. It's like, Elizabeth, we're going to get one of those.
Yeah.
We are. Like, yes. It's going to be huge. It's going to be crazy.
And we're going to eat it.
Do you want cherries on top? We're going to get cherries.
Yeah.
You want the marshmallow stuff? Oh, yeah. We're going to get all the stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, we just do that and they look forward to it. They'll ask me like, whose turn is it on the next daddy-daughter date? I'll be like, well, it's Mary's turn. I'm like, okay. But then after Mary, it's your turn. Okay. Yes. I mean, it's one of the things they look forward to the most. But it's so important. Do they like it because we go to adoration? No, they don't.
No.
But the first thing we do is we go to adoration. And I have like a backpack with books for them to read. Because, you know, they're, like I said, 3, 4, and 6. Mm-hmm. Their attention span, a whole hour, is very difficult.
Sure.
So they will read the books that are in the backpack. You know, just things that are quiet.
Mm-hmm.
But that really is one of the best things I've done as a father. Establishing that. And, you know, we start with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And it prepares them to be able to learn how to be quiet.
Yeah, and they get to see me
doing it,
loving our Lord,
right?
Because I'm there kneeling for a long, long time of that hour, right?
So. Sure. When we, if you're listening to this on the radio, go check out our podcast, because maybe on the podcast we should talk about, like, I just read The Hobbit.
Ooh, let's talk about it. Yeah,
I
want to get
that.
Your thoughts.
Okay, we're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass
and cheers to Jesus.
Okay, so as most of you know, I have not read The Lord of the Rings.
We've talked about that. I mean, this is pretty well
established.
This is
very well established. I have started, I've decided to go ahead and audiobook them.
Great idea. That's what I would do. But that's how I read everything, so.
Well,
actually, yeah. You know what? That is the one book I'm actually reading. Very, very, very slowly. I'm like a third of the way through Fellowship of the Ring. I only read on Sundays.
I'm a Lord of the Ring fan.
Yeah, because you're like...
I knew that.
Right. A Tolkienite.
Yeah. Is that what they call them?
I don't know. I made that up. I'm sure I'm not the first one to make that up, but I only read it on Sundays.
Yeah.
During quiet time.
Leisure.
Yeah, it's like a leisure... I sit down and like read The Fellowship of the Ring. And it's like, wow, I forgot all the stuff that's not in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. So I read it, or I listened to it on audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
It was grueling at first. So there's a lot of things that we could talk about. I don't want to like bore people because everybody else is right. I'm the only one, right? This is like...
you're not the only one.
I'm like one of the only people in this whole world.
You're a minority.
Right. When I listen to audiobooks that are not captivating to me, they drag on for a lot longer because I find other things to do besides listening to audiobooks.
Sure.
The first... So it's like 10 and a half hours long.
Okay.
Okay.
Not too bad. I mean, that's kind of like a shorter audiobook.
Yeah, that's
really.
Very,
yeah.
Very, very manageable. The first 4 hours took me about 4.5 months.
No kidding.
And I almost quit like 3 different times.
Wow.
I almost said, like, you know what? I just don't care.
Right.
Like, I tried. I gave it a good, honest try.
I think it's a stupid story.
Yeah.
I said it. Heck, I think it's stupid.
I just don't care. Uh-huh. You know? But I just decided, no, I'm good. I'm just going to truck through this just so that way I could. The second half of the book, I think, is way better than the first half of the book.
Yeah, it's like a battle.
Yeah. And so, you know, Bilbo being able to he starts off just a little bit, sure. Starts off, you know, obviously timid and self-conscious and, you know, unassured of himself and didn't think that he was, you know, geared up to this heroic calling. And then, you know, as time goes...
he didn't even know what he was getting into, kind of, you know, in the beginning.
And he just takes these little steps of... So I understand this whole virtue thing, right? Because it's this whole thing of understanding, like, I'm not worthy, you know, the self-deprecating almost. Like, I just want to be by myself. Like, don't ask me to do anything. Let me do my own thing.
Right.
And I'll live my life. And it's very anti-community almost. But he doesn't think he's worthy of everything, and every time he does these little things that help him grow in virtue, help him grow in fortitude, help him grow in prudence and
courage.
And fortitude.
Big time.
That's why I said fortitude.
Yeah, courage.
You know, fortitude. And as he continues to do these things, he grows further, and he stops thinking about himself as much. He's like a lot less self-centered and more thought about others. I like the idea of also the goblins. Yeah, the goblins or whatever, like the horde, the gold. I'm sorry?
The orcs?
No.
The goblins and the orcs are different.
The goblin, you know, that they hoard the gold so much that they would rather
die of starvation than leave their gold and worry of them, you know, getting stolen or something. So they're so focused on the gold that they're rejecting and neglecting their duties and their self, you know, they're taking care of themselves. Yeah.
And what do they call that? Like dragon's disease or something in the book where anybody like can happen to anybody. And it kind of happens to Thorin Oakenshield. Is that his name?
I don't know. Oakenshield, but is Thorin.
It? Yeah. I think his
Thorin dies at the very end.
Yeah. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Thorin dies.
I think his name's Oakenshield. Thorin Oakenshield.
Okay.
And so, you know, he's a good king. And I think that's a good analogy. And I don't know. I haven't like looked any of this up. I honestly don't think that when Tolkien set out to write these books, he was thinking like, I want to write a book with this message. I think that
no, he was a storyteller.
He was just such a genius, creative storyteller.
Yeah,
that those
he's on
those
record for
things,
not liking allegories.
Oh, C.S. Lewis
didn't like Narnia.
Was a friend of his,
right?
And that's he said, like, yeah, I don't really like Narnia because I think allegories are lame.
Right.
And for the record, I love the Narnia books. But I think he was just writing a story and these things just like because he was such a good storyteller. It just came out.
He like breaks so many of the like author like writing 101. Right. He breaks all these molds. You're not supposed to have characters that sound close together, right? Because then they become confusing. But he has all these characters that all sound
Goin and Loin and Boin. You know,
yeah. They have all these same characters. You know, all the elves are all the same name. Basically.
Super confusing. I don't remember which one this is from the other one.
Right, yeah. And which is what you're not supposed to do as when you're writing fiction.
Yeah, because you could make it anything you want.
Right. I recognize his, you know. More so now, even without I have not read obviously Lord of the Rings. Uh-huh. I can recognize his genius in being able to have a story, like being able to storytell. The problem is that our modern minds were not used to being like just being drudged through all of these descriptions.
It's slow. And honestly, The Hobbit is faster than. The trilogy is slower, but it's also good. Like at every turn, like in the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring, you know, when.
No, I don't know.
Well, when Frodo is just setting out, he kind of like, he meets this person and then he meets this person. And they really have nothing to do with the broader story. I mean, nothing to do with the end. Right. They're just like people he meets, but they're beautiful. Like in and of themselves, it's like, wow, what a beautiful little short. If you like kind of view it as a short story, just like, like those couple chapters where he was with that person. Like that was really, really nice in and of itself. But like what I was going to say with the I think it's called Dragon's Disease. I forget what he calls it. But, you know, like you get obsessed with gold, which happens to Thorin. I just thought that's a really beautiful analogy for.
I'm glad that he realized it though before he died, and asked for forgiveness.
Oh yes, absolutely, and gave his life like a man, or like a hobbit. Like a
little
a
elf.
Dwarf,
yeah,
like a dwarf man. Mm-hmm. But you know, here is the gold, which is a good, a glory due to a king. Mm-hmm. You know, he is the king. He's the rightful king under the mountain. Mm-hmm. And the gold belongs to him. It's his gold. It's part of the glory that is due to a king. But yet, when you have your desires are disordered, it can create even the things that are good and rightful to belong to you. Mm-hmm. Those things can still, when not properly, when not disciplined, you know, sort of like a undisciplined appetite for something, it can become your master. Even something that belongs to you. And, you know, like that happens so much today. Money specifically.
Sure.
It's so easy.
I got to tell you, though, as I was reading it or listening to it, you know, I've heard Sam Guzman, our buddy, said like, oh, I just read that to my kids. They loved it. You know, I hear our buddy Scott Bass said, oh, I just, you know, I'll read it to my kids. They loved it. As I was listening to it, I was thinking, there's no way my kids would like could focus on this.
Yeah.
There's just no way. Like, either these kids are really, really, you know, captivated somehow.
Uh-huh.
But I just know there's no way my kids could.
Elizabeth will sit and listen to absolutely. She just gets sucked in to a story. I'm not kidding. Like, when I sit there and read at the table, I'll look over and she's just like glued. Her eyes are like wide.
Oh, yeah.
And she's just glued on to me.
Her eyes are always wide, though.
Yeah, well, she is very expressive, right? But she'll just be sitting there like.
She tells stories hanging, with her eyes.
Hanging on, you know, like every word that I'm saying.
I don't know how.
Mary is not so much that way. She'll sit and listen and enjoy the story, but she's not captivated by stories the way Elizabeth is.
I don't know how the your also, kids do it.
I don't think that those books. I mean, depends on the kid. Like Elizabeth, she would sit there and listen. I love that story.
She would understand it.
Uh huh. When she listens to, you know how like you see kids watching a movie and they're just like totally zombied into the movie, you know, or even adults, you know, their eyes are wide open, they're not blinking. And they're not even aware of other things in the room. They're just like sucked into the movie. That's the way she gets when you read a story to her, right? But anyway, most kids don't do that. But you need, it does take a lot of attention to detail. For a story like that, it's a complex story. And certainly The Lord of the Rings is even more so.
So I got to tell you, though, overall, if I had to like give it A, B, C, D, or F.
We're out of 10. Do it like.
Okay.
10.
5.5.
Really?
I thought it was okay. I thought the ending was a lot. The second half was a lot better than the first half.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean like, there's, for you, it's also you've got that problem where it's hyped up so much, you know?
Right. I thought there's cool parts, you know, when Baggins kills the spider and he gets to name his sword, you know, and that's a monumental moment. And I mean, there are monumental moments that you're like, oh, good. And you can catch yourself like
what is going
to
happen?
Like rooting for right. Bilbo Baggins, yeah. You know, to do the right thing, even though, you know, he's like having this internal struggle.
Dude, when they're in Mirkwood and like they're falling asleep and falling into the river and stuff, like that was stressful for me.
Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't like to me. It just wasn't like a.
I'm surprised I'm remembering these people's names and like the names.
Captivating,
of the,
like it wasn't like just on pins and needles, or I didn't consider it. I don't know. 5.5 is what I would give it. Maybe maybe 6. Just
when people talk about the Lord of the Rings, they don't talk about it the way they do because of the Hobbit. They talk about it
because of the trilogy.
The trilogy, right? Okay. And then like once you're done,
I'm gonna do it.
Once you're done, like yeah, give it some time. Yeah. Let it rest.
Yeah.
But
there's like, and it's not like, and you've said this to me before, and it's like, it's just not true. Like, I like stories. Like, I like novels. I like fiction books.
You do?
Yeah. I just.
So, like, what's another one that you've read that you just, like, really liked?
Where the Crawdads Sing is
you
one
like
that.
That one. I haven't read that. Andrew Pudua? That's
Andrew
what
Pudua told me said. To. And it's not one that you would read with your children. It's not a children book, like to read out loud to your children, because there's
profanity.
No, it's not really profanity, but there's like a part where there was
situations. Situations.
Sexual situations.
Yeah.
So take that.
I'll tell you, I'm reading this book right now.
It's not. Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you finish. I thought you were done.
I'm just saying, like, it's not something where you should like not read it because you're worried about.
Yeah.
Sexual.
It's
just not for your kids. But it was a really good book. And it was very captivating. I listened to the whole thing in about a 36-hour period. And it was a 14-hour, I think, 14-hour audiobook.
Your family was gone.
Right.
So that should be explained. Otherwise, people might be like, wow, Adam, that was intemperate of you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right.
Your family was gone on
vacation.
Visiting family.
Yeah.
So you were a bachelor
right.
for a few days. Yeah.
But... I finally got through The Hobbit,
mm-hmm.
Listening to it, and was like, okay, good. I got to take a break from this.
I suspect someday, because, you know, like, I started off on this audiobook adventure, like, almost probably 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And realized
you use Audible?
I do.
Yeah.
I realized that my I had to first go back, and it like for a year, all I did was listen to kids' books, mm-hmm. just to kind of form my imagination again. I realized mm-hmm. that this like as a part of my education, I was uneducated in fiction. Because I also used to have this attitude, which you and I both used to feel this way, which we don't now, that, like, if I'm going to read a book, it's not going to be fiction. I'm not going to waste my day reading fairy tales, okay? Because mm-hmm. I'm an adult. Mm-hmm. I'm a man. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's dumb. Mm-hmm. Well, now I realize that, like, no, I was dumb, actually, and that there's actually a lot of value in these great works of literature and that there's a lot to be gleaned from them. So I think that maybe someday you'll go back and read them again.
Sure.
Sort of like the first time I had Lefroig. I said, that's disgusting. I'm never going to do that again. And anybody who likes this is an idiot. Mm-hmm. And then I tried it again like a year later after really drinking a lot of scotch. And I said, that's delicious. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Remember, I brought that up. I said, I think you're jumping too early with something like that. And we talk about how we went through this trip. It was like, it gets used. You have to get used to talking, to hearing all this stuff that don't seem essential or don't seem like, but they're just part of developing how your body and your mind are used to seeing without seeing.
Yeah, so, I mean, and modern writers don't do that. Right. So modern writers don't do that. The microwave society that will give me the meat, give it to me now. That way I can move on. And they used to not do that. And so as a modern person listening to or reading or listening to non-modern writers, it is difficult.
Yeah. I just finished Les Miserables, and it was at some points just like for 4 hours, like in the middle of the book. Victor Hugo, he goes on for like 4 hours all about the Battle of Waterloo. It is it's like he's actually kind of building context. But that was a long 4 hours for some context, you know, like mm-hmm. you could have done that in about 15 minutes.
Right.
Really well.
Right.
You know, but that was just the way people used to write, you know, and I think that just because I don't understand it, there is actually a beauty in it that I don't understand. And I know I don't understand it. I would never write that way.
Yeah, me either.
But they all did it. I think there's like definitely a reason. I'm reading a book right now called The Hiding Place.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nonfiction book.
Yeah.
It is so good. So Pamela read it several months ago for the well-read mom.
I think I've read that book.
Group just, that she's in.
I just can't think of. I'm pretty positive. Yeah,
Joan's
read that
in that
book.
Group too.
Yeah, yeah. Joan's in that group. And so we were going to go to the Netherlands here in a few weeks. Netherlands just closed.
Oh.
So I was reading this book because it takes place in the Netherlands.
Hey, so does that mean you can do the MC job for?
No, we're going to Costa Rica.
Oh, you are.
Yeah. So anyway, but it's so. It's about these two sisters who are spinsters living with their dad. They have this watch repair shop in Holland, and the Germans invade during World War II. And basically, this lovely Holland country becomes Nazi, you know, overnight. And they're trying to run the underground. And some of the things, like, especially that her dad says, just some of the, like, things he says in this book are incredible. Just, like, earth-shattering, like, wow, what a thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing response, mm-hmm. you know. I'm about halfway through. I've already seen the movie. There's actually a movie. It's actually pretty good, and it follows the book pretty well. But
maybe I saw the movie. That's why I'm thinking of it.
Super good book. It's about 10 hours, you know, not very long.
Okay.
What else you got? What are you going to read? You're reading the Iliad now, is that right?
Yeah, I'm listening to the Iliad. Yes. Yeah.
I say reading. I just say reading.
But I'm actually reading other books.
Okay.
So, so I'm listening to the Iliad right now.
How's it going?
So I got through, I'm on book four. Book two was brutal. It's 50 minutes of just basically telling you kings, their location, and their alliance, their allegiance to whoever.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like 50 minutes of all these different people. And so I went and I talked to Deacon Garlick about this because he's, you know, a great books professor and, or like tutor. And so he's read it. And
he's very well read.
Very well read.
And educated about what he's read.
Right. And so I asked him about it. You know, I was like, hey, is this like important? Is this something that I should
Can
be...
I skip this?
Well, I already listened to it all. Right. And so I asked him, but my question was like, could I tell you anything that I listened to? Like, could I regurgitate any of it?
No.
I couldn't. So I asked him, like, is this something that I need to, like, go back and listen to again and, like, be still and, like, listen and, like, almost could take notes so that way I know exactly what's going on? Like, is this imperative to the story?
And he said no.
And he said no. He said the reason why, it's obviously going to be better if you do in the long run. But the reason why is basically he's going through all of Greece, like, going through and telling him, like, listen, your king and your army is actually in allegiance with this person. So everybody over here that you think, you know, you may be on your own, actually, you're with this alliance. And he was, like, telling all the different countries and all the different people and lands, like, you guys are all together. Which it would be news to a lot of the people who don't, you know, there's no internet, there's no newspapers, there's no way of knowing this other than the book. And so as you're sitting there reading this or listening to it, whatever it is, and you're like waiting to see, is Tulsa on the list? Are we part of this whole group or not?
Which side are we fighting on?
Right. You know, so the whole purpose of this is like, so that way everybody understands at this time period where everybody is, where everybody stands. Does it matter for us? No, not really. So I was like very confused.
But it's part of the story.
But it's part of the story.
And you can't leave it out.
Right. And so I was very confused. I was really worried because it was like, that was brutal. That was tough to get through. It was another one that was like, I almost quit on this. 50 minutes.
So you're either, Dr. Malash told me that you're either an Iliad person or an Odyssey person.
Right.
And personally, I think if you're an Iliad person, you're just weird. The Odyssey is totally better.
Everybody says this.
I don't know.
So I'm ready to get...
Who thinks the Iliad is better? What's better about the Iliad? I'm not putting down the Iliad. The Odyssey is just really great. And
I am ready to get to the Odyssey. I got both of them, right? So I'm going to listen to the Iliad, listen to the Odyssey, and go. Anyway.
You know what's disappointing? The Trojan horse, it's not even in the Iliad.
It's in the Odyssey, though, right?
Yeah, it's in the Odyssey. But still, I got to the end of the Iliad and it's like, what? They didn't even do the thing? The war's not even over?
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, I think that's good. Thank you, Juan.
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni, or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.